working in food is amazing. It satisfies a lot of things for me. It satisfies, you know, creativity. It satisfies the fact that if I'm hungry, I can cook something and I can eat it. You know, it satisfies my kind of intrinsic need to please people. So, you know, when my customers are happy, I'm happy.
This is The Crackling. I'm Anthony Huckstep. The melting pot of different cuisines, cooking techniques, and cultural backgrounds has given Australia's culinary landscape a unique yet rich tapestry. For chefs working with people of different backgrounds, it offers an insight into different ways to cook and get the best out of ingredients. For Victor Leong, the world of fine dining gave him a different lens to look at the food of his Malaysian and Chinese heritage, and it's helped him create one of Australia's best restaurants. Victor, you weren't always going to be a chef. Tell us about the moment you realised it was for you.
I think at the start I wanted to pursue a career in finance or, you know, some kind of business management kind of field. I wasn't sure what that was, but then, you know, looking at what I was good at, you know, I wasn't very good, to be fair. You know, I didn't do very well in accounting in university. I failed marketing many times. So I'm sitting there going, oh, I don't know. So I think the only kind of avenue left was sales, and I wasn't a huge fan of that. And I think, you know, I've always been passionate about food, and I knew it was something that I had to kind of pursue. You know, once I finished my degree and I still had the opportunity of doing an apprenticeship, you know, at probably the right age, you know, probably a late start compared to a majority of the industry. But I felt that if I pursued that and, you know, I didn't like it after the third or fourth year, at least I'd be, you know, a qualified chef, and then I'd review my kind of options there. But, you know, I think after the first year and a half, I really decided, yeah, this is it, you know. So, I've been passionate about it. You know, I love working in food and with food and, you know, in kitchens. And, you know, now it's the next stage is working on projects that set, you know, food businesses up and stuff. So it's come full circle. And also now I actually do a lot more of the business stuff than, you know, I ever did. So it's good fun.
Did starting a bit later in the industry as a chef, was there advantages for you with that?
Well, I think, you know, I feel I got a slight advantage in terms of, like, I knew the focus on areas of the work I wanted to focus on, you know what I mean? Like, and it was a little bit, and I knew I didn't have as much time as everyone else. So it was a little bit of a race to get to, you know, like head chef or sous chef or chef de party at the early days, you know what I mean? And I knew the kind of the skill sets that I was after, and like a study style, I guess. And I feel like I gathered that from university a little bit, you know, like if you wanted to study and focus on, you know, one area of a subject matter, you just jumped in and did it. And then you kind of set yourself little kind of markers on what you deemed was, you know, competent or successful, or, you know what I mean? And I felt that I did that early in my career to hone in on the style of food and the techniques and the skills that I wanted. So I feel that it was a slight advantage in that sense.
You mentioned that you always loved food. Tell us about what role food played in your family growing up.
Yeah, you know, I grew up in the inner west of Sydney, in Burwood and Homebush, when I was, you know, early teens, you know, primary school, high school. Food was always something that played a significant role, I guess, with any kind of second generation migrant family. My mother's a very good cook, and we all used to sit down at the dinner table at 6:30 every night as a family. And, you know, and there's, you know, it was kind of like a place where mum would, you know, A, kind of preserve heritage with some Chinese dishes, B, kind of soothe some, you know, homesick pains from, you know, food that she missed by cooking stuff that, you know, was from Malaysia where she grew up. And also to explore, cuisines that are new to the neighborhood. So yeah, like, I remember mom cooking, Lebanese dishes because our landlady at the time gave us, like tabbouleh and falafels and stuff. And then, Strathfield was a slowly emerging Korean ne neighborhood. So there was a lot of kind of cultural influences there. So it was a lot of, influences from, neighbors and friends and, other parents and children from the neighborhood. So it's pretty cool.
Pork is a real integral ingredient for Chinese and Malaysian cuisine. Is there any dishes from your youth that you can tell us about that you remember?
It's funny you say that because mum used to cook sweet and sour pork, but she didn't like doing it because you'd have to deep fry at home, and that's one thing that's like a bit of a pain in the ass to do. So she used to make a deal with us. It would be like, okay, because I have a brother and two sisters, so the deal was you can either have Peking duck on your birthday or sweet and sour pork. So we used to talk amongst ourselves and organize it so it was alternate. You know what I mean? So we'd get One of us would get Peking duck, one of us would get sweet and sour. So we'd eat that twice. So we'd have Peking duck twice a year and sweet and sour pork twice a year. So funny that's it's sweet and sour pork, but and mom used to do it so that she'd deep fried the pork so it was super crispy, and then she'd serve the sauce on the side. So essentially she'd basically make two dishes. So it was crispy pork neck, like in light batter, kind of flour dredge, and then deep fried until it's crispy, and then seasoned with like a Cantonese salt and pepper spice, and then that was served with a sweet and sour sauce on the side. So if you add it with the sauce, you get sweet and sour sauce, but if you have it with by itself, you just get salt and pepper pork. So it's pretty good.
Tell us about the early days, working in commercial kitchens. But what were the real influences early on for you?
I think it went a little bit before that. When I was in high school, I had a part-time job, working at a local delicatessen, and that was run by two really lovely, endearing old Italian ladies. One was from Venice, Manuela, and Rosa was from Sicily. So they both had kind of very different ideas of what's the best cuisine in Italy. But the deli was great fun because I got to learn a lot about charcuterie, a lot about how different kind of Eastern European and Southern European cultures enjoy pork, in charcuterie, salamis, salumis, and then even some kind of some liverwursts and that kind of Baltic style, pressed and kind of cooked sausages and a lot of smoked sausages. So it was good fun.
What sort of influence did that have on you moving forward with food?
I think, when I was that young, I was just really into like serving people from the neighborhood and finding out what the customers liked and then trying these products myself and then figuring out what styles of kind of charcuterie I really liked, you know what I mean? So I think that was a nice foundation of identifying what I thought was delicious and what kind of worked in different cultures. And then as my career progressed, parts of that charcuterie style kind of honed in on a little more technical, more regional, more kind of I guess, chef styled preparations, which are pretty cool because then, I had an idea of what these things were, and then having being taught by, a certain chef about how to make a terrine, how to kind of process foie gras, how to make a pate, I already had like a pretty good foundation.
Tell us about what it was like working in the kitchen of Galileo at the observatory.
Galileo was great. It was kind of the last of the big brigade type kitchens. I remember there was like 12 or 16 chefs every service and lunch and dinner 7 days a week. And yeah, it was great because, it was one of those kitchens where there was a meat section and that, the meat section had a chef de partie and a commis and maybe an apprentice. The fish section had, a chef de partie and a commis. The garnish section had like four chefs in it. You know what I mean? And then, sauce section had two. So it was really cool to learn, you know, when you were given, when you were assigned a new section, you really kind of learnt it, you know, and it was just that, you know, it was very kind of, I guess it's the kind of Henry Ford model of, you know, a production, you know, one person's a specialist in one part, and then when it comes to assemble everything, it all comes up together at the same time. So, you know, learning, you know, on the meat section, and it was very classic kind of French run, Japanese French type, brigade, where, you know, if you had like a beef dish, it would have a veal jus sauce, you know, a pork dish would have like a pork sauce, you know what I mean? So it was everything was utilized, you know, framed around the protein, and then everything kind of built around that. So it was good to see, you know, like a pork dish would go on, and then, you know, in the French school of cuisine, there wouldn't be like a pork bone stock, right? But then in the Japanese school of cuisine, you know, pork stock is everywhere. You know, tonkotsu ramen is a pork stock. You know what I mean? So it was nice to kind of see, you know, a utilization of what the French school of cooking would say about how to cook the piece of meat, but then like applying a Japanese lens on, you know, maybe the sauce application or, you know, the presentation. So it was really interesting.
What sort of influence did that foundation have on what you do today?
Well, I think, you know, all of the people, all of the chefs that I've ever worked under has taught me something, and you know, I've gleaned something from them, you know, some a little bit more obvious than others. But you know, I think Haru's style of food was, you know, it was very, like, I loved it because it was very technical. You know, he approached each dish from like every kind of angle. You know, the way he kind of processed stuff was, you know, a really kind of traditional, masterful way in the kind of grand chef in a French style would, you know. And I really appreciated that, especially in terms of like a formative training. So yeah, it was good. It was good.
You also worked with one of Australia's most renowned chefs, Mark Best, at Mark, with that has the most incredible alumni. You worked with some amazing chefs. Do you have any stories from that time?
Yeah, I had probably, it was the first time I worked in a kitchen where we used to do this pork jowl dish, right? And I still use the same technique on how to process it, because I think it's amazing. And I remember Mark served it. So it was a roasted pork jowl, and yeah, he you know, he brined it before, and then he cooked it really slowly, and then you kind of carve the skin off, and then you crisp up the skin, the fat in the pan. And the dish he had, it was, I'll still remember it. It was just served with just wilted spinach with an oyster cream, a poached oyster, sesame seeds, and then a sauce that was made from roasted duck bones with a port reduction and star anise. And I remember first time having it, and I thought, this guy is a genius, because this is the exact same flavor profile you would get if you went to a Chinese like roast meats joint, and if you order the roast pork and they serve the roast duck sauce with it. And I went, this is exactly it. And I knew, you know, then that, yeah, I'd like this place. I'd like to work here very much.
Well, the alumni are amazing from that restaurant. What was it like working with that team?
Oh, it was great. You know, I think it was a small team. So, you know, I went from Galileo to Mark, and Mark is, yeah, I think maximum five, six people in there. And yeah, the work is really intense. Everyone is really talented, and it was great. It was great to work in an environment where everyone's kind of focus was to, you know, to be the best. And you know, we all worked really well together, you know. And it was a nice team where everyone's kind of personalities kind of worked together. You know, it was, and yeah, we all just full of energy and creativity, and it was all kind of steered together from the leadership of, you know, of Passy and, you know, the vision of Mark. So it was really, it was great.
Mark Best is known for wanting perfectionism and re really pushing people. Was it challenging in that kitchen in that sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, one of the reasons I really enjoyed working there is because it was challenging, and it was also very creative, and it was nice that, the creativity was kind of taught to all of us, and that comes with, a lot of, it's not a lot of fun doing it when you're doing it, because it comes with a lot of rejection and a lot of questioning and a lot of kind of, a lot of trying to steer you in a direction. And we were all pretty kind of angsty and creatively angry. So it was good. Yeah.
You worked in the Mark Kitchen, which, had five or six chefs working at a time, to a kitchen that was absolutely huge and one of the biggest restaurants in Sydney at Mr. Wong. What was it like changing to such a different atmosphere?
Yeah, no, it's that, I think when we opened Mr. Wong, and when we first talked about the project of Mr. Wong, we never realized how big it was going to be. We knew it was going to be big and busy. And once you kind of start working with, such a big team, especially in the early days, it was a big challenge trying to get the systems right, and everyone working together. But it's a testament of how amazing that restaurant is. And just looking at Dan Hong's success, you know what I mean? And what he, Dan's influence on all of us as chefs, and as young chefs, back then, is amazing. Just to see, what he can achieve, and the kind of kitchens that he can manage, and the amount of creativity that he can have for that kind of scale is amazing. So yeah, it was good, and the team was amazing as well. Like the opening team was, everyone's gone on from that opening team to either, be a head chef or open their own restaurant, which is another kind of testament of Dan's ability to kind of, seek out talent and work with them, and kind of, build it to the point that, the next step is, owner operator or head chef. So it's pretty good.
What was the impact like on you? You grew up in a house with the Chinese and Malaysian influence, and then you had the heavy backbone of French cookery behind you in your career, to suddenly cooking in one of the biggest Cantonese restaurants in the country. What was it like delving into that world for you?
Oh, it was great. I think it's one of those things, like I made a decision to kind of explore the food of my heritage, and and discover that. And I think one of the and I'm lucky to be able to work with someone like Dan at the time to kind of really explore it in a very kind of similar lens, you know what I mean? Because his background is very similar to mine in terms of, the fine dining training, and like his passion for food is amazing, and the way he kind of looks at cuisine is really cool as well. His focus on things that are delicious, and and creating in that kind of space is quite fun. And also to explore that, in that team with his direction and his kind of his lens on how Asian food is, because it's not just Chinese food that Dan's an expert at, with his years at Miss G's before, and his mother running successful restaurants. It's nice to see to have it from, a little bit of a hospitality, like an experience hospitality lens, so yeah, it's great, really, really good.
Tell us about how Lee Ho Fook came about.
Yeah. Lee Ho Fook. So yeah, Lee Ho Fook came about. Well, I got introduced to a group of hospitality operators in Melbourne, and at the time they had this empty tenancy on Smith Street in Collingwood. And Smith Street's kind of very similar to kind of King Street in Newtown. Bohemian, all the activity kind of happens in the afternoon and late nights. Lots of kind of creatives and artsy type people in that neighborhood. So when I saw the site, I thought, this is pretty cool. This would be a nice spot for my first restaurant. And then, yeah, it kind of worked out well, because what the team wanted was like a cool, funky kind of creative Chinese restaurant that would sit kind of well in a dining landscape. And yeah, it's funny to think that's 8 years ago now, when it all started. So yeah, and I think it was nice. It was nice that they were, they were happy to let me be creative and run with, you know, whatever ideas I had, and it was a good time then for me to kind of just start delving into the style of food that I wanted to do. So, yeah, it's been great.
Was during this time as well that you made some great connections with producers as well. Do you have any stories of time spent on pork farms at all?
Yeah, it's I've got a couple of good ones. One is Judy from Western Plains. She saved my ass how many times and how many functions, with like next day, suckling pig and pork deliveries. So shout out to you, Judy. But there was actually an interesting one about 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago now. I had an opportunity to film a documentary that I don't think actually got any airtime, but there's a roll of film somewhere, and it was this young kind of documentary maker who wanted to kind of do a kind of from start to finish process of like how to get pork, out into, from basically the paddock to the plate of the customer, right? So, and the opportunity arose that we went out to this all organic farm. It's called John A. Farms out near, I think it's near Macedon, if I remember correctly. But we got to actually, yes, kill and slaughter a pig, and and cook it. Like it was full on. Like we're out there for 3 days. It was camping, and it was kind of cool because we saw the pig, and the pig is they raise everything so close to kind of nature's cycle, and it was a really happy looking pig. It was a French Duroc. It was, I don't know if pig varieties, but and then it was a mobile abattoir that came out, and then we slaughtered the pig, and then just going through the whole process from from the gunshot going off to like sticking it to making to collecting the blood, and then skinning it and hanging it, and then we ate all the offal the first day because the pig's got to hang, and then cooking parts of it as the next couple of days kind of went on. It was amazing. It was a really, really great experience. So obviously the slaughter part was a little bit daunting because it was just like, okay, sorry buddy, but oh, good. There's some of the not, like it was a very kind of educational experience, but also like it changed a lot of conceptions of what I had about how kind of animals are slaughtered, and and some offal, to be fair. Like we cooked everything, and everything was delicious, you know what I mean? And I used to be like, oh yeah, I don't eat pork liver. I think it's too kind of mealy and too kind of irony. Not my kind of thing. But we cooked that liver from that pig. It was amazing. So I guess it comes from a multitude of different things, right? But yeah, great.
The media have had all sorts of views on what you're doing at Lee Ho Fook and the sort of food that you're cooking, to modern Cantonese, to taking it to a new level. But what's your interpretation of what you're doing? Tell us about your cooking.
I think the food at Lee Ho Fook is evolved, and it has to, because even I've changed, and my customers have changed, and anything that's been around 8 years is definitely going to evolve. So I think where we are now, we're a fine dining Chinese restaurant that serves a tasting menu, and we explore all the regions of China, and then try and incorporate some historical factors from Australia, because we're a Melbourne restaurant that serves Chinese food. So that's kind of, we're settling into that groove at the moment. So yeah, I'm really proud of what the team has achieved, and where we are, and how far we've come. So yeah, I think we're settling into kind of more, I don't really like the terminology of modern or contemporary anything, because what we are is, what we're living in right now is contemporary, because then it's more like I wouldn't say rework classics either. It's just, yeah, we're settling into our style, like a new Chinese restaurant, really. So, and with an Australia, like a pretty heavy Australian leaning creative lens.
Do you have a pork dish or two that you can tell us about that you've had on the menu of late that sort of typifies what you are doing?
Oh, it's funny you say that because I did have the pork chow dish, which is almost identical to Mark's kind of preparation. So it was a pork chow, slow roasted. The process is the same. We brine it with a brown sugar brine, a little bit of garlic, Szechuan peppercorns, cook that slowly, take the skin off, crisp it up. So it tastes kind of like, it tastes like a slightly meatier version of the Cantonese siu yuk, which is the crispy pork belly, but without the crackling. So it's just this kind of slither of meat. And it's nice with the jiao because you get fat on both sides and like a quite a tight muscle in the middle. And then, yeah, we just serve that with a Cantonese style roast duck sauce, you know, coming, because the first time I had it at Mark, I just went, yep, this combination is exactly what I'm, you know, I remember eating every time I go to a roast duck restaurant. And so we're riffing off that, but we served it with a taro and potato milfoy, which is just slices of taro, like, and, you know, 10% of potato to kind of stick it all together. We cook that with duck fat, press it, and then cut a slice off and fry it until it's crispy, and a little bit of pickled onions through that. So, yeah, really, really kind of simple. And that was on a lunch menu last season. So, yeah, you know, we've been in the current situation. Once we reopen, I think the menu is probably going to be a little bit lighter. So that guy's going to probably get on the bench, and something a little bit more spring is going to come on.
What is it about the pig and pork that's so integral and versatile in Chinese cuisine?
I think it's the applications, you know what I mean? It's the variety of textures and results that you can get, you know what I mean? Like all the way from you make a jelly from the skin, you take the jelly and you put it into a dumpling to make a soup dumpling, you know, all the way to you get a tender cut from anywhere from the neck all the way to the belly, you know, the lean meat of the shoulder and the leg can be minced nicely, you know, the fat can be cut up and, you know, put through a sausage, you know, that doesn't even actually have to have pork in it. Like, for example, we make a duck lap chong at Li He Fu in kind of like a fresh style of sausage, but because duck is quite lean, we put pork belly and pork fat through it, you know. So it's, you know, it helps. It's a versatile meat, and you know, it just gives so much. You know what I mean?
Well, what is it that you love about what you do?
I think what I love everything about it. I think, you know, I love working with food. You know, I think working with food is amazing. You know, it satisfies a lot of things for me. It satisfies, you know, creativity. It satisfies the fact that if I'm hungry, I can cook something and I can eat it. You know, it satisfies my kind of intrinsic need to please people. So, you know, when my customers are happy, I'm happy. I like working in a team of passionate people. You know, I like operating in a city with serious hospitality operators. You know, I like the relationships I have with my suppliers. Yeah, I like all of it.
Well, Victor, we've loved hearing your story today on The Crackling. Please keep in touch and we'll catch up again soon.
Really nice to speak to you, Anthony.
This is The Crackling, a Deep in the Weeds production in partnership with Porkstar. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we catch up with some of Australia's best chefs and pork producers to discover what makes Australian pork so special.